Zoran. Like, you interviewed Zoran when he was at 1%, and it's like, well, I didn't do that.
Sorry.
Going to war and maybe even joining Blackwater. Like, I feel like there's some red flags there, or having a Totemkopf tattoo. Just
some red flags there. I love how gentle they are with their side. There might be, you know, maybe some red flag. You know, maybe Blackwater, Nazi tattoo. You know, maybe some black. Oh my God.
Wait, has he laughed hysterically at like both, at every, was there another black candidate where he's like laughing at how stupid of a Cory Booker? Tucker Carlson? No.
All these fascist forces in this country are
the fascist forces, yes,
screaming from the rooftops, and they chose the issue of Israel to attack me on, which is the most base.
Do you think he is going to have like long-term vocal damage from trying to talk like this all the time?
I think it's vocal flare.
It's a uniting position. They took a 90-10 issue
and
chose to be on the 10% side of this 90-10 issue.
Hassan Piker's name has been everywhere lately. Not for winning an election, not for passing legislation, not for doing anything really, except for yapping. And depending on who you ask, he's either one of the most dangerous voices in American politics or one of the most honest. Hassan is among one of the biggest voices on the American left. His megaphone is a Twitch stream where he spends about 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, breaking down political news to an audience that skews young and male. And if you listen to him long enough, you can see why. He's blunt, if not crass. He toes the line between relatable and aspirational.
Is this
he's
another fan piece?
Yeah, of course.
Of course, he's controversial.
This is a thug. This is an extremist. This is an advocate for terrorism.
Which is why some factions of the Democratic Party have been beefing with him for the last few weeks, pointing to off-color comments he's made over the years. I sat down with Hassan Piker to talk about exactly that. We talked about why Fox News can't stop covering him, the ideological battles inside the Democratic Party, what he really thinks about Israel, and what, if anything, the Democrats could do.
What does he really think? Finally, the truth! What does he really think about Israel? Thank God! I've been dying to know!
To earn his vote in 2028. This is my chat with Hassan Piker. Enjoy.
Hassan Piker, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting. I'm a big fan of your work.
Oh, thank you.
Very excited to be on.
Thank you, man. Thank
you. Jesus Christ. Do you think he times his interviews like, okay, I'm going to wake up at 8:57 a.m. so I'm ready for my interview at 9 o'clock. Yeah. Oh my God.
Did you appreciate that? Well, I guess this is an interesting way to start, which is that you talk a lot, man. Like respectfully, right? You talk, it's the job. I wonder, what do you think has contributed the most to your kind of current position in the national media spotlight? If I were to kind of give you a few options, I think obviously out of context, clip economy is an option here. Maybe you talk about Israel and Palestine and progressive things and conservative things. But what would you say has kind of put you at the center of the discourse?
I mean, it's hard to figure out exactly what is the highest offense because I have an anti-imperialist framework. I'm socialist. These are not exactly ideas that a lot of people are fond of hearing, especially, you know, corporate-backed mainstream institutions. And then my position on Israel, of course, is also very frustrating for a lot of people.
Of course.
But I would say that the fact that I speak on a contentious format that is very interactive on polarizing issues from a perspective that is of the left, a perspective that many Americans are either unfamiliar with or taught to be antagonistic towards, combine all of that and you're going to have an inevitability.
Of course. Inevitability.
I guess on a personal level, how are you processing like the onslaught of criticism? I mean, we'll get into the politics of it all in a bit, but I'm curious.
I love it. I seek out people who criticize me.
It's how you're doing personally. This isn't the first one, but this one's been maybe a bit different. Would you agree?
Yeah, but it's been different, not in a negative way. It's actually been quite positive. I don't find these last couple of weeks, I mean, I find it strange that it's been going on for the past couple of weeks. Nothing goes on for more than 4 days in America. In our current news cycle, this has been the most resilient thing. And I think it's partially because I'm live all the time. So I'm obviously going to give Fox News more ammo every single day, as they have been. They've been updating the RNC research department is constantly posting new clips of me every day. I even joked about it at the Yale Union last night where I was like, today we're going to talk about the resolution and the American Empire. And then tomorrow your grandparents are going to hear about it on Fox News, which is literally happening right now. So I guess that's a big part of it as well. Maybe some Republicans think this is a great opportunity to like tie someone that they consider to be radical to the Democratic Party so they can attack the Democratic Party. And then there's plenty of right-wing forces in the Democratic Party who also recognize that there's like an ideological battle within the party itself. The idea that we talk about with like big tent or, you know, who's in the tent and whatnot, all this stuff actually is a pretty basic spiritual fight that the Democrats have conducted, and the centers have successfully defeated the left flank over and over again up until recently. That's the heart of it.
Could you name that spiritual fight? Like, what are the two sides of that fight?
Yeah, I mean, we saw probably the most visible version of this in 2016. It was Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was an establishment Democrat, very right-wing on many issues that pertain to the economy, right? Definitely socially progressive, but has switched that around as well. Much more malleable to right-wing forces, not coming at the issue from a place of consistent moral principles, but more so just like focus tested. The type of person that you think of when you say establishment, type of person that you think of when you think about someone who's a spokesperson for a bank. And then on the other side, you had Bernie Sanders. Love him or hate him, he's honest, right? Like, this is what he believes. He's been fighting for the same exact battle for 80 plus years. He was earnest, sometimes too stubborn, sometimes came across as like a curmudgeon.
For 80 plus years? He's been fighting this battle since he was two? How old is Bernie again?
Mm-hmm.
Based. King!
But it's authentically him. And of course, ideologically, He's on the left, pro-worker, pro-labor unions, Medicare for all, free college education, things like that. I mean, these were identifiable policies that people associate with him. Bernie Sanders was able to unite a lot of people, but more importantly, he was able to offer the language and maybe even begin the political journey for a lot of people. I mean, even including people like Zohran Mamdani, who openly admits like Bernie Sanders is what caused him to realize like, oh, maybe I'm a democratic socialist. That was pretty big for the DSA. It was pretty big for, I think.
How many times do you think Hassan will bring up he talks to Zohran?
I talked to Mamdani. I'm getting the Abdul guy elected.
I'm sorry.
I know Bernie.
Western
AOC.
Left to a certain degree, definitely huge for the American left movement. And now we're seeing the fruits of that decade later.
I want to come back to the policy stuff in a bit, but I do want to hold on you here for another kind of beat. It feels like maybe there's an effort to cancel you, but I don't know how you're perceiving that. Do you think there's an effort to cancel you, to deplatform you? And if so, why? If so, why not?
Cancellation, I don't think is real. I'll just say it.
It's easy to say that when you have no chance of ever getting banned or demonetized for anything. True.
I don't think it's real. I mean, sometimes I wish it was, because there's a lot of people I'm like, we shouldn't listen to this guy. And perhaps that's how Jay Tapper feels about me.
Anti-Israel, anti-Semitic. So why are so many Democrats doing campaign events with him?
I personally feel that way about, like, I don't know, 90% of the dudes I have to deal with in the space that I'm in. You know, the Andrew Tates, the Claviculars, the Sneakos of the world.
The people you have to deal with, you wouldn't talk to or debate any of these motherfuckers. What are you talking about? Oh my God. All those times he's had to deal with Sneeko and Clavicular. Oh my God. Kill me.
And that's why they think I'm a woke scold, a joy killer, annoying left person.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hold on. Chat really loves to bring this up because they have autism. That is correct. Hassan did have 1 8-minute debate with Andrew Tate like 20 years ago. Correct. You guys, yes, that is right. Whether or not women should drive cars. So I'm so sorry. I know you guys love to bring that up for some fucking retarded fucking reason, but no, it was dragged onto a Twitch stream, I think, by fucking Aiden or somebody. No, he's never seriously argued with any of these fucking people.
And that's censorious.
Oh, or it might have been on XCC stream.
But that's those are the trenches I'm fighting in. I don't think it's
trenches real. I'm fighting in. Give me a fucking break. Holy shit.
I don't think they're, especially in this day and age when there are so many different platforms that you can be on, you can claw yourself back to relevancy, as Nick Fuentes clearly did. I mean, he got hit with the full scope of deplatforming at a time when people were like, oh, that's a white nationalist, neo-Nazi. Like, we're not going to, I mean, he's an open white nationalist.
Remember when you shut Andrew Tate the fuck down? I don't think I've ever gotten to debate Tate, have I?
Honestly, we're just not going to put him on our platforms. Like, it doesn't exist anymore. And can't.
Oh, on a Twitter space. Oh, yeah, because he didn't know anything about any. I remember that. It was retarded. But that was just a standard fucking retard conservative. I remember that.
Well, it's neo-Nazi, like, with the full scope of deplatforming at a time when people were like, oh, that's a white nationalist neo-Nazi. Like, we're not going to, I mean, he's an open white nationalist neo-Nazi. We're just not going to put him on our platforms. Like, it doesn't exist anymore. And cancel culture, on top of that, I think only works if your audience decides, like if your people decide that you're not serious or you've done something worthy of cancellation. Like the things that people want to cancel me over, quote unquote, cancel me over on, you know, CNN are ridiculous. Like that's why people.
Oh, my God.
Will listen to me. You know, they'll be like, oh, he's vulgar.
You have become an issue within the Democratic Party yourself. Tell us about that.
I don't think I'm necessarily an issue within the Democratic Party as much as I am an issue for a lot of consultants.
Yeah, I speak for 21,000. I've spoken on Twitch for 21,000 hours. And yes, I'm vulgar. I'm vulgar towards right wingers. I'm vulgar towards reactionaries. I'm going to bully bullies. That's kind of the whole point of why people are
watching. Oh, the only issue that people have with Hassan is he's so mean to right wingers. True.
Watching me. And then they'll be like, oh, he's vulgar towards people who defend Israel. It's like, yeah, I'm an anti-Zionist.
Oh,
and
true.
Guess what? So is 90% of the party's base at this point. Maybe not to the same degree, but like people don't like Israel. So that's the second reason why I think this entire like Hassan is a danger, we must stay away from him narrative has been so funny. Because like even from the start, I had a lot of people calling me up. Two funny things happened. One, a bunch of politicians hit me up to be like, hey, I hope you're doing all right. I'm not going to review
them up.
A bunch of people in politics hit me up to be like, hey, I hope you're doing all right. I know things are hectic, right? It's never great to be on the receiving end of this like barrage of hate. And I was like, I'm chill. Like, I'm cool.
Oh,
and they were
God.
Like, what do you mean? I was like,
it doesn't even affect them, dude.
These guys don't even understand. This is a marketing campaign, pretty much. You got Fox News and corporate Democrats, AIPAC, ADL, Third Way, all of my enemies, all of the people whose politics I find to be repulsive, all these undemocratic forces in this country, all these fascist forces in this country are screaming from the rooftops. And they chose the issue of Israel to attack me on, which is the most like base uniting position. They took a 90-10 issue and chose to be on the 10% side of this 90-10 issue. So yeah, they can yell at me every day, but it's going to backfire on them, which it did, which is why they then started trying to shift the narrative to Hassan is dangerous in many other different ways, ideologically dangerous in many other different ways. And also we should probably stop talking about him. He's just irrelevant. And it was like, well, we're on the fourth week now. Like, why are you still talking about me? Then? Yeah, I'm irrelevant. Give it up.
I find it genuinely interesting that two of the loudest anti-Zionist voices in American media right now are you and Tucker Carlson. It feels like you guys are almost like the most prominent, loudest, most consistent voices.
Oh my God, imagine comparing him to Tucker Carlson.
Against Zionism and against what Israel is doing in the world. And what do you make of the rise of anti-Zionism on the right?
I wouldn't even say Tucker Carlson would call himself an anti-Zionist. He'd be like, anti-Zionist? I don't even know what that means. He'd be like, I love Israel. You won't hear me say that, okay? Like, let me tell you, from my assessment, a country is not always going to be representative of every single individual in it, but like, our country can be representative of an ideology. And right. I think Israel has evolved into its last stage of fascism at this point. Tucker clearly doesn't feel that way. I think Tucker is a very dangerous propagandist. He has a higher priority for always pushing the platform of what I like to call WASP nationalism.
Does anybody really believe, any adult actually think that white racism is the biggest problem in America's inner cities?
We saw a version of his room reading and his capabilities of being that dangerous propagandist, like normalizing the Great Replacement Theory and numerous other white supremacist talking points on the main stage when all the way back in 2016, when he was the most popular Fox News broadcaster, the most popular news network in the country, he regularly talked about economic populism. He would talk about workers' rights.
Today it's McDonald's employees, tomorrow it will be millions of truck and taxi drivers with self-driving cars, eventually it will be lawyers and physicians and so on. Will it ever be newspaper columnists and cable news anchors? We're praying not.
And then he would associate that agenda with legacy Americans, what his version of making white nationalism more palatable. Instead of saying like white Americans, he would say legacy Americans, because he can't say Native Americans, obviously. He's doing that with Israel, I think. That's my assessment. I can't know what's in his heart, because sometimes he will say things or he will do certain things. Like when he went to the Palestinian Children's Hospital in Qatar, I was like, I think maybe this might have changed him a little bit. Like he might be sincere in his advocacy on that issue sometimes, but I still see him as a dangerous propagandist for a repulsive, very toxic ideology that's ironically not dissimilar to the one demonstrated in Israel through Zionism. It's just there's a different in-group and a different out-group. That's the way I see Tucker's version of events. A lot of people get mad at me. I think he's even more popular than myself, certainly, and maybe even more popular at this stage on the issue of Israel as well.
You say that Israel is entering like its final stage of fascism. What do you mean by that?
Zionism, from its inception, has been an ideology that is an ethno-religious supremacist ideology. There's an in-group, there's an out-group.
It is crazy to me how many people just don't know anything about anything in the Middle East, and then he comes on to explain it to them. Holy fuck, this drives me crazy. Oh my God.
Dynamic, it's identical to other historic fascist movements. And at its inception, there was the Nakba, a lot of violence that took place leading up to the Nakba, and certainly during the Nakba in 47 and 48, where 750,000 indigenous Palestinians were expelled from their homes, ethnic cleansing. And they were never allowed to return back to their houses, right? That was an unbelievably violent event. And there have been times where Israel has spiritually continued that process. But Israel has maintained an apartheid for 80 years at this point, since the inception of Israel. And the apartheid practice is obviously racially discriminatory and devastating for the almost 15 million Palestinians that live all around the world, some of which are not allowed to return to the occupied territories, and some of which currently live under the oppressive Israeli apartheid state, half in the West Bank, occupied Palestinian territory, and half in Gaza, which is a hermetically sealed open-air prison.
Open-air prison, right.
Mm. Yeah. So,
he got that.
That practice has been going on, whether Americans pay attention to it or not, and it's one that Desmond Tutu, Nelson Mandela, many other figures have correctly pointed out as apartheid. These are people who have fought against apartheid and in Africa, right?
This is a good place for me to then kind of actually double back, because I want to ask you about, like, why do you think Democrats have such a hard time accepting you, a person like you, into their ranks? I look at Graham Platner, who, similar to you, has said some disagreeable, if not like outright awful, terrible, bad things in this past, or Jeff Duncan, who championed like legitimately awful policy in Georgia. And it appears that there's room for those people. Obviously, everyone's talking about Liz Cheney on the campaign trail with Vice President Kamala Harris. So there's space for those folks, but why not a person like you for some Democrats?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I think a lot of the people who hate me also hate Graham Platner. So there are a lot of Democrats who also are like, don't vote for Graham Platner. And even then, I feel like I don't have the same past as Graham Platner. I mean, not his like Reddit posts. I don't care about that stuff. But I'm talking about like his experience, going to war and maybe even joining Blackwater. Like, I feel like there's some red flags there, or having a Totemkopf tattoo.
Some red flags there. I love how gentle they are with their side. There might be, there might be like, maybe like some red flag, maybe Blackwater, Nazi tattoo, maybe some black. Oh my God.
Small red flag.
There's stuff that I have also personally been like, that's an insane thing. I can't believe nobody stopped that or called you out for having a Nazi tattoo on your chest. But like, I actually do find Graham Platner to be one of the most interesting candidates. And he is, again, another Bernie-crat. And I obviously have some sympathies for that. And I think that he is the perfect guy to prove something that we've been saying for many, many years, which is that you can actually take out a red state Republican senator or, you know, purple state with left populism. And he's the proof, which is, I think, the real reason why a lot of people get mad at Grant Platter. Because if Grant Platter had that background as a machine gunner, had the totem cuff tattoo on his chest, but then was talking about sensible policy around healthcare. Let's talk about affordability. Let's not talk about free healthcare. If he was like, you know, saying, I will never take AIPAC funding, but Israel is our most valuable ally. Not a single one of these Democratic Party consultants that have been freaking out about him would say a damn thing. Okay, they wouldn't. Same thing goes for me. The reason why a lot of people are yelling at me on the Democratic Party side is because of what I represent. They don't want to hear from people like me. They don't want to hear that people like me have a big audience. They don't want to hear that people like me are representative of large forces in the party. They don't want to hear that at all. They want to live in an echo chamber, live in a totally separate reality where Americans will forget about Israel. They won't talk about our relationship with this country. They won't talk about genocide. Mm-hmm. And they'll just vote for the Democrats for harm reduction reasons, true, right? It's very clear that that's what they wanted to do in 2024. It failed. I mean, you saw me at the DNC. I was running around telling them, don't do this. You're going to lose. Like, this is terrifying. You guys are celebrating for no reason. Like, you're doing end zone dances, but it's not a guarantee at all. And by the final day of the DNC, when I heard Kamala Harris's speech, after I'd already gotten my press credentials revoked as well for some of the things that I was saying about the DNC, not having a Palestinian speaker, I heard Kamala Harris say, you know, I'm going to oversee the most lethal military. I was like, this is so bad.
Oh my God, dude. This single quote, they obsess over it.
It's over. Like, this is going to be devastating. And it turned out to be true. Democrats want to go back to business as usual politics, where they don't have to be responsive, where they don't have to change their methods, because they want to keep collecting corporate donations. Mm-hmm. They don't want to do their jobs. Mm-hmm. They don't want to actually represent their constituents. They just want to be the marginally better alternative to the growth of fascism in this country.
In a way, I think there's this sense out there that you are so against Democrats. So, like, why do you even make an effort? Why do you even caucus with these folks? Why are you, you know, trying to help certain Democrats get elected? Why not go out and do something totally different? That's kind of a Twitter kind of conversation, kind of criticism that I see of you. Yeah. What's your response to that?
Well, you gotta go where the base is. In the United States of America, the overwhelming social base are they're self-identifying liberals. They might not actually be liberals when you dial in and figure out exactly the things that they would advocate for, the things that they would believe. I obviously, my perspective, it comes from a Marxist tradition. I, you know, see things from a class perspective,
Marxist
or at least a class first perspective, although there are certainly other elements, especially in American politics, that are very relevant, like, you know, race. Whether I like to admit it or not, right, most Americans are liberal. They self-identify as liberal. And this even includes Republicans as well. You have to talk to people with the language they understand if you want to mobilize them, if you want to make them a more productive social force, a force for change. And the Democratic Party is a much closer vehicle or a much closer agent for that change, even if it will never be a workers' party.
It reminds me of something that Angela Davis said during the 2024 election, which was that, you know, electing Kamala Harris would allow for more radical kind of organizing in the future, is kind of the argument that she made for voting for Kamala Harris. And you said something that I want to kind of hold on, because out of all the things that, you know, you've kind of faced criticism for, the things that you said, in my kind of corner of the internet, there are a couple of clips going around. I'm on the black corner of the internet, and a couple of clips are going around.
Layups. Remember, layups, layups, layups. All the reason why you get to do interviews like this is because you're going to get the most sanitized, most cucked out version of criticisms that anybody's ever made of you. And then the person will present them in the gentlest way possible. They might even suggest, they'll try to downplay them. So earlier, when you're like, well, here's some criticism I've heard of you, you know, Twitter criticisms, they give you the softest, most sanitized version of this, almost like a vaccine to let you deal with it in this platform, to say that you've already addressed it. And then your answers to these criticisms can be amplified and spread out further. The manufacturing here is just crazy.
Things that you've said, in my kind of corner of the internet, there are a couple of clips going around. I'm on the black corner of the internet, and a couple of clips are going around of you being pretty dismissive to black folks kind of in your comment section. There's like the root.com kind of comment that you made, which was a completely unnecessary blow to the root. Come on, man. The root's doing good work.
Sometimes.
Like, this is like, come on, man. The root's doing good work, man. Right? Wasn't that totally another? Come on, man. The root's doing, like, oh my God.
Root.com article regurgitators in here instantly being like, sweetie, you don't understand black people.
So, you said this thing at the end of your kind of rant about standpoint theory. And I think a common critique of leftists is that they can be a bit class reductionist, mm-hmm, and dismiss the race and racism kind of issues at play.
Oh my God. This is an actual decent question. Now, Hassan will not answer it with any substance. Will he ask a follow-up? Let's find out.
In America, which you just touched on, and I want to know what your perspective is there, because there's a real critique out there that Hassan Piker is anti-black after those clips have played, and I want you to respond to that criticism specifically.
Of course. So I'm not, but I understand why, as we talked about already, in short bursts, when you clip something, when I'm talking for 21,000.
Okay, we got our short bursts out of context. Okay.
Now it's very easy to present me as something I'm not. The inception of this was, ironically enough, many, many years ago when I ratioed Nicki Minaj. That's when Black Twitter was like, fuck this guy. Can I curse on the show? I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah. So Black Twitter was just mad because you ratioed Nicki Minaj. That's all of Black Twitter. Okay, let's go.
You can curse. You're free. Be free.
Nicki Minaj famously talked about her cousin's balls.
Yeah.
And
we're going to poison the well on Nicki Minaj so that we can make our anti-Black response to Nicki Minaj justified. Okay.
You know, I tweeted something back and I was like, the world is awaiting your scientific contributions, you know, something like that. And I ratioed her and I got the attention of the Barbs. And back then, they were a much more powerful force. Now the Barbs are in shambles. I feel like finally, as she totally leaned into the, you know, Trump administration and is doing whatever she's doing now, that discourse is now over. But at the time, Barbs were very mad at me because I was in the process of replying to her about her allegiance with Tucker Carlson, being like, Nicki Minaj, like, Tucker Carlson's a white supremacist. Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And everybody got mad at me. They're like, this is a Black woman. You're talking over a Black woman. You think a Black woman doesn't know who a white supremacist is. And there is this reactionary attitude that I think some Americans have, even some Black Americans do. Obviously, they've experienced white supremacy. That's the, you know, primary anti-Blackness is the primary form of hatred that persists and has become fairly sophisticated in the ways that it is demonstrated through every orifice of American existence, right? You don't have to just straight up say certain slurs or make certain comparisons, although
so for people who didn't catch this, there was this for underlying a lot of the I don't actually read any of this shit, so I don't fucking know. Okay, but for in sociology, there's this thing that the I only know about this because the far right people used to talk it all the time. It's called like standpoint epistemology, or sometimes people just call it like standpoint or whatever, or standpoint theory or something. And basically, I don't know if intersectionality came from this, but I think it was the idea that you can analyze the way that a person engages with society through the different identities that that person has. And what a lot of people on the far right would argue about it is that, like, oh, well, standpoint epistemology means that you can say 1 + 1 = 3 if you're Black. Ha ha. Like, that would be the way they would kind of dismiss it. So the host here brought up this question because Hassan was dismissing standpoint. The reason why Hassan doesn't like it is because Hassan wants to only analyze things through class. That's it. Because it's the one thing where he can be a proletariat and none of the other identities matter, right? But he's obviously not speaking to that at all. I don't know if the host even knows what question he asked or if somebody writes the questions for him or if he's going to let Hassan get away with that next question. But that was why he was asking, like, oh, well, you were very dismissive of standpoint. Like, what's the reason why? But I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, Trump will do it every now and then, like with the Barack and Michelle Obama AI video, while still being able to get that message across that you are anti-Black, right? Urban style individuals, the utilization of terms like thug, or even as Lee Atwater famously said, welfare, attacking certain policies in an effort to attack Black people without ever mentioning Black people whatsoever. So these two issues are directly aligned with one another because anti-Blackness, while the identification of it is on racial boundaries, the impact of it is still very much class violence.
See, he's trying to bring it back. He's basically saying, fuck your standpoint shit. It's all about class at the end of the day. But he has so much like jargon and word salad shit. I feel like he's workshopped these answers.
Right? Like, it turns back into a class issue at the end of the day. Black people are overwhelmingly a part of the working class. Ironically enough,
Jesus, yeah.
In modern America, Black people are also, Black people have the highest union participation rate amongst all of the different ethnic and racial groups in this country.
Is that true? Is there like a poll for that, or is there a way you can see that?
What did you say exactly?
Black people have the highest participation in union-related labor.
Oh, I have no idea.
Because they work in these jobs for the most part. So like the violence that Black people experience, the targeting is racial, but the violence they experience is still class violence.
It's still class violence, true. Remember when we were lynching Black people for being a part of the proletariat?
So that's my, you know, broader perspective. And as far as standpoint epistemology goes, or at least we're going to talk about root.com.
Oh, my God. Never mind. No, I can't do it as a white person. Having like a sound clip that just plays the Uncle Ruckus music.
Jesus.
That'd be way too much. Never mind. Certainly he's going to push back on this or follow up on this to some extent, right?
One of the things that I've seen, and maybe I shouldn't be saying some of these things because,
I'll be back.
You know, I'm white. But
whoa, he shapeshifted. He's white today. He's not Middle Eastern.
Wait, I thought he's Muslim.
Or, well, it just depends. Mood.
An Arab?
It depends. He's on his white game today.
Today is white.
There is anti-Blackness in every aspect of American society, including in liberal commentary. And my criticisms of Root sometimes revolves around not identical, but somewhat similar versions of anti-Blackness that I see and hear from Republicans.
Okay.
But that is maybe demonstrated in a more liberal adjacent way. And my common critique always is around the way that Black men are portrayed in some liberal circles. Black men in general are still infinitely more progressive than white men are. Like, that's such a ridiculous thing.
Progressive? In what way? What? Hold on, somebody linked something. From the Bureau of Labor Statistics on page 2, bullet 4. Black workers remain more likely to be union members, 11.4%, than white workers at 9.9%, Asian at 8.7%, Hispanic at 8.9%. What do they mainly do for work? In my mind, union jobs are like skilled trade labor things, which I guess I just imagine in my mind to be generally more often like white people. Oh, it doesn't say. Union nowadays means public sector. Are government jobs considered union? Are they generally union jobs? I don't know. I have no idea. Postal and UPS unions, freshman warehouses, etc. Okay.
And we see versions of this. We saw versions of this with even like Barack Obama coming out and saying, if you don't want to vote for Kamala Harris, black men, like, you might just be a little misogynistic. Like, what are you doing? You know, and I thought that was also a ridiculous thing to say. Now, of course, I'm white. Barack Obama is black. And not only is he black, he was the president, right? So he's a profoundly important figure. So. And my common critique always is around the way that black men are portrayed in some liberal circles. Black men in general are still infinitely more progressive than white men are. Like, that's such a ridiculous thing. And we see versions of this. We saw versions of this with even like Barack Obama coming out and saying, if you don't want to vote for Kamala Harris, black men, like, you might just be a little misogynistic. Like, what are you doing? You know, and I thought that was also a ridiculous thing to say. Now, of course, I'm white. Barack Obama is black. And not only is he black, he was the president, right? So he's a profoundly important figure. So when I say something like that, I think people hear that and go, you're way too confident, white boy, right? You shouldn't be saying things like that. So there have been instances like that where, you know, my advocacy or the things that I talk about rub people the wrong way. I understand that.
I think people who watch your stream, they'll see folks like Olay or FD Signifier and others on your stream and kind of can see that there's something more nuanced happening here. I'll say as well.
And like the layup. Oh, dude. Fuck. We could analyze so many of these interviews. The layup, it's the easy question, already kind of massaging the answer, no critical pushback, accepting the answer without any kind of follow-ups at all, and then like giving even more credence afterwards, like, Jesus.
Well, you know, I'm not here to defend TheRoot.com. I think they're in black ownership for the first time in a while.
I'm not here to defend TheRoot.com. Even though his opening question to this was, come on, TheRoot, they do good work, don't they? Okay.
Shout out to Ashley Allison. I want to do something fun because we're kind of coming to a close here. And so I want to play a little bit of a game with you, Hassan.
If
you're a game, I'll tell you the game. I'm going to give you a bit of a rapid fire 2028 candidates, okay?
All right, let's do it.
I'm going to give you a name and you'll say yes or no. Like, we'll just, and we'll go down the
list,
right?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. First name, Rahm Emanuel.
No, but also it sucks because he said he would come on the show. He was like defending me. And not that I want him to come on the show, but no, definitely no.
Gavin Newsom.
No.
J.D. Vance.
No. Absolutely no. So wait, is this who I'm voting for in 2028? Like,
this is what you vote for. Okay, let me tell, based on what you know about them today, would you vote for these people in 2028?
Oh my God. J.D. Vance. No, I will never vote for a Republican ever.
Gretchen Whitmer.
Maybe. Now we're getting into more comfortable waters. She's too anti-Medicare for all.
There you go.
She's like,
yeah. All of these people that they're pretending to like because they're popular, I'll eat every horrible solid in my house. I will eat my sink, my fridge, or whatever. If somebody like Hassan were to support somebody like Ossoff running for president, it'll never happen. Unless Ossoff literally joins like the fucking Jewish Voices for Peace or whatever the fuck, then it'll never, ever, ever happen.
She's linked to the private healthcare industry, but better than others, definitely more responsive as a governor. But you know, I'm 50-50.
All right. AOC.
Yes.
Tucker Carlson.
No.
Cory Booker.
No. Absolutely not.
Jesus. Yeah.
On Ossoff.
Interesting candidate, maybe.
There we go. There's the hedge. He was more excited about him in the past, but now that Ossoff is getting a little bit more prominent, now we are hedging a little bit. There, good job. Good job. There you go.
Kamala Harris.
Oh God. No.
Pete Buttigieg.
No.
Like, it's so funny how optically retarded it's. Oh my God. I did not go ruckus music. Wait, has he laughed hysterically at like both at every. Was there another black candidate where he's like laughing at how stupid of a. Cory Booker. Kamala Harris. Tucker Carlson. No. Jesus Christ.
It's all good. Never mind.
I mean, I guess while we're here, actually, we're talking about candidates. You know, you live in California. Who are you thinking about for the governor there? I mean, we have a few folks. It's been a bit of an upheaval lately. I mean, we could play the same game. I can give you a couple of names.
Oh, do it. Do the one that they seem to like right now, because it's just so fucking ironic. He won't do it, though.
James, you can tell me yes, no, maybe give a little bit of an explanation.
I pre-watched this. He's going to say Steyer. He won't say Steyer, though, because he went on a stream, didn't he? The billionaire guy, who's, by the way, whose sole issue in 2020... was climate change.
So let's start. Katie Porter.
No. Katie Porter was a very interesting candidate. Obviously, like she was able to take over a purple district and was making a name for herself. She had the whiteboard. She would cook all of these like executives. And then even before we found out about like her anger issues, the thing that I care about the most on
is she not anti-Israel enough for him?
Top of that, because that tells me what your character is. But what I also care about on top of that is like what forces you're going to represent, who you're going to back. And her rapid change from being someone who was like somewhat pro-worker, you know, responsive politics, potentially a Bernie-crat, right, has shifted She became anti-worker, and I find that to be
Katie Porter? She's the one who would, not to be mean, but would virtue signal all the time in Congress with the things that she would hold up or whatever, right? Yeah, she's like mega, like no offense, but like retard tier progressive when it comes to, or when it comes to like finance and stocks and everything else. She's like, didn't you have a pharmaceutical company that made $1 billion? Doesn't that mean you fucking hate America and want everybody to say, Hassan doesn't like that woman? What did she do? Jesus.
Someone who was like somewhat pro-worker, you know, responsible politics, potentially a Bernie-crat, right, has shifted. She became anti-worker, and I find that to be a very dangerous type of politics. So definitely no on Katie Porter.
What about definitely. The people's billionaire, Tom Steyer?
So I talked to Tom Steyer. I interviewed him, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think he's the most interesting.
Oh, my God, the billionaire. It's like the same shit that happened on the fucking Republican side. They wanted an everyman who represented the average conservative, and they go with Donald Trump, a crazy fucking billionaire real estate guy from New York City, and now we've...
Yeah, but he went on his stream.
Holy shit.
He talked to him. He kissed the ring, man.
It's so boring. Oh, it's so stupid and empty and hollow. All these people's politics. Oh, my fucking God.
Yeah, if Gavin Newsom would have talked to him, he would have loved him too.
Ability right now in this race. I even before Swalwell's sexual assault allegations came up and he had to quit the race and also resign from office, those were like the top three candidates, right? You had Swalwell, you had Porter, and you had Steyer on like the Democrat camp. And then you have Bianco and Hilton, right? The two Republicans. And I was genuinely terrified. I was talking to some other folks that also live in California. We were trying to figure out, like, what are we going to do here, right? This is such a ridiculous situation that we're in, where we can have, because California has the top two primary systems, jungle primary. So we could have a potential general race where the top two candidates were both going to be Republican. Now, obviously, Trump fixed that for us. So shouts out to him. He, you know, endorsed one over the other. And then that causes a lot of the Republicans to lean into one. And then also the Swalwell stuff came out. But yeah, I think Steyer, I can't believe I'm saying this, is probably a little bit more responsive than the rest of the candidates are. And I mean, there's another guy in California that I'm backing as well. His name is Shoykat Chakrabarty, and he's a centimillionaire, right? He's been in this game for a very long time. He's a co-founder of the Just Democrats, AOC's first chief of staff, right?
He's a centimillionaire? What did he say?
Does that mean you have 100? Is that 100 millionaire at least? When did this term become? I feel like this is something I've heard. This centimillionaire?
One. And then also the Swalwell stuff came out. But yeah, I think Steyer, I can't believe I'm saying this, is probably a little bit more responsive than the rest of the candidates are. And I mean, there's another guy in California that I'm backing as well. His name is Shoykat Chakrabarty, and he's a centimillionaire, right? He's been in this game for a very long time. He's a co-founder of Just Democrats.
Problem?
What is it? Bro!
Well, he has to differentiate because he's a millionaire.
Oh my God, bro. Are we gonna get to the low B billionaire? He's a lowercase B billionaire. He's a 1 billion. For some, men get really mad when you put this on Twitter. But anytime a person says, oh, I think it's because a woman made the tweet. When a guy says he makes six figures, that means he makes 115K or less. Yeah. It's always six figure. All right, you make 102K. Okay, six figure. Yeah. Now it's going to be like, oh, he's a mini billionaire. He's just barely a billionaire. Like 1 to 2 billion net worth. Barely.
Like Bezos, barely. You know?
Yeah, he's not like a... He's barely a billionaire. He's not a deci billionaire or a deca billionaire, you know?
That's AOC's first chief of staff, right? So he has really, really solid politics. They have a think tank. They write like incredible policy papers. But what I have realized, or at least maybe this is code, is that all of those guys that we're voting for on the Democratic Party side, the establishment Democrats, they represent the interests of billionaires and millionaires regardless, even if they themselves are not billionaires or millionaires. Mm-hmm. So in the case of Tom Steyer, if he's advocating for, you know, single payer healthcare in the state of California, that's a very appealing policy for someone like myself. I care about the policies and not the background of the person. So yeah, I think Tom Steyer could be
okay, Chief.
A very interesting governor for the state.
Okay, last one, Xavier Becerra.
So I'm not super familiar with him, because if you haven't reached like a certain level of viability, because there's Ramsey Robinson as well, who's supposed to be like the California PSL candidate. There's Butch Ware, the Green Party candidate as well. And these guys are unfortunately having a very hard time making it out that 1%. A lot of people get mad at me for not like highlighting certain candidates. And I'm like, I don't have a magic wand, right? Like,
I don't know these guys.
Make it happen. People be like, well, what about Zoran? Like, you interviewed Zoran when he was at 1%. And it's like, well, I didn't do that.
Sorry.
Right? Like, I can't make it happen. People be like, well, what about Zoran? Like, you interviewed Zoran when he was at 1%. And it's like, well, I didn't do that on my own. Like, you know, maybe Third Way thinks that and they're terrified, right? But that's not the case. Like, Zoran is he's a generational politician. He's very charismatic. But more importantly than that, he had the backing of the DSA New York machine, Working Families Party, in a city that is that has worked tirelessly to create this door knocking operation, in a city that was much more open minded to Zoran's worldview. Is entirely different than the California governor's race. I didn't do that for Zoran. I couldn't do that for any candidate, really. And it's not up to me at all. So I try to make these pragmatic choices. So it's a long way of answering your question that I don't know enough about Xavier.
Okay, last one. You've been, you know, consistently critical of Democrats. What will it take for Democrats to win over Hassan Piker?
Oof, so much. I think they have to earn the trust of not only people like myself, but just the American people. They have to become a party that truly represents the interests of the masses, mm-hmm. truly represents the interests of the working class. They have to have, you know, 1,000 Zorons and Grand Platners and people that work in their own specific districts in their own states that are still almost single-mindedly and very stubbornly fighting to express the desires of the masses, fighting to improve their lives materially, and communicating that to as many people as possible to ensure that no Republican ever wins another election ever again.
Wow. Hassan Piker, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
Holy fuck.
That's his friend, Steven.